Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, October 29th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Pfluger's Bill Targets Federal Resistance, by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. Representative August Pfluger has filed a bill that seeks, quote, to develop and implement mandatory training, unquote, for federal employees. The Stop Resistance Activities by Federal Employees, STRAFE Act, is, quote, a bill designed to prevent career federal bureaucrats from actively resisting the directives and policies of a presidential administration, unquote, according to a press release from Pfluger's office. Quote, the legislation aims to uphold democratic governance by ensuring that federal employees abide by the decisions of the American people as voiced through their elected president, unquote. The act contains a framework to, quote, mitigate resistance within federal agencies, unquote. It includes training for federal employees that outlines prohibited activities that would obstruct or undermine the directives of a sitting presidential administration. Penalties for those who engage in resistance activities against the president. An, quote, external complaint reporting process, unquote, that bypasses traditional inspector general channels for the sake of transparency. Periodic reports from each federal agency to provide updates on complaints and the status of actions taken against those engaging in resistance activities. Quote, career unelected bureaucrats cannot be allowed to undermine the agenda of any future president, unquote. Pfluger was quoted as saying in the press release. Quote, we must ensure that the network of federal employees that brazenly carried out resistance activities under the first Trump administration is not unleashed again, unquote. It wasn't clear what specific networks or activities Pfluger was referencing. The Reporter Telegram has reached out to his office for more information. Pfluger was not available for comment Monday afternoon because he was completing military hours, according to a spokesperson. This article is entitled, AST Space Mobile's Midland-Made Satellites Achieve Milestones, by Mella McEwen. AST Space Mobile has racked up several recent successes with its Midland-Made satellites. First, the company announced the successful September launch of 5 Bluebird satellites built in Midland, and just announced the successful unfolding of those satellites, which it achieved 6 weeks ahead of schedule. The unfolding of the first 5 commercial satellites is a significant milestone for the company. These 5 satellites are the largest commercial communications arrays ever launched in low Earth orbit, commented Abel Avalon, founder, chairman, and CEO of AST Space Mobile, in a statement. It is a significant achievement to commission these satellites, and we are now accelerating our path to commercial activity. AT Space Mobile is building a space-based cellular broadband network accessible by everyday smartphones. Its current target is 100% coverage across the U.S. The satellites feature large, phased array antennas designed to extend cellular coverage globally, eliminating dead zones and delivering space-based cellular broadband connectivity to underserved regions. These arrays, successfully unfolded after being tightly packed for the launch, are the largest ever deployed commercially in low Earth orbit, LOE. The company operates state-of-the-art, vertically integrated manufacturing and testing facilities in Midland, spanning 185,000 square feet. The Midland facility is already at work on the second generation of satellites, which will offer 10 times the capacity of the current generation of Bluebird satellites. AST SpaceMobile also announced it has been selected by the Space Development Agency for another transaction agreement to compete for upcoming prototype demonstration projects under the Hybrid Acquisition for Proliferated Low Earth Orbit, HALO, program. The HALO program is a strategic initiative designed to accelerate the development and deployment of advanced space technologies. During the year, the company has secured additional strategic investments from AT&T, Verizon, Google, and Vodafone. The company has agreements with more than 45 mobile network operators globally. This article is entitled Midland Halloween Events, Creepy Dolls, Hocus Pocus Trivia, and More by B. K. Richter, staff writer. Looking for a creepy good time? Or an adult-friendly Halloween-themed activity? Here are a few events happening within the Midland area. Did we miss your event? Send us an email and let us know. Creepy Dolls Event. This event will be hosted from 6:30 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. Tuesday at the historic Brown Dorsey home in Midland. Guests can wander through the halls of the historic home at 213 North Weatherford Street by candlelight, where creepy dolls will be placed throughout the residence. Guests can also attempt to guess the dolls' names via an alphabet key and be entertained by reading stories about the dolls. All ages are welcome, and the event is family-friendly. This event is open to the public, however, the entry fee is $15. The fee supports restoration projects of the historic home by the Midland Historical Society. Hocus Pocus Trivia. In the words of Winifred Sanderson, "I put a spell on you, and now you're mine." If you consider yourself a fan of the Sanderson sisters, then this trivia night, inspired by the film Hocus Pocus, hosted by the Tall City Brewing Company, 3303 West Golf Course Road, is a must-see event. The event is from 6:30 p.m. to 8:45 p.m. Tuesday. Winners will walk away with spooky prizes. Guests are encouraged to wear their best witch hats. Pumpkin Walk. The Bush Family Home State Historic Site is planning its first pumpkin walk. Individuals, families, and businesses can decorate a pumpkin to win some fun prizes. It doesn't matter if the pumpkin is carved or painted. They will be placed in the front yard of the Bush Family Home, 1412 West Ohio Avenue, for voting. Voting will be from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday. Attendees can vote in categories such as Most Creative, Spookiest, and The Absolute Best. Email the Bush Family Home at bushfamilyhome@thc.texas.gov for more information. Boozy Bingo. Prepare for cocktails, candy, and bingo. The Blue Door, 4610 North Garfield Street, will be hosting this event from 7 to 9 p.m. Wednesday. There will be Halloween-themed cocktails, a Halloween-inspired playlist, and prizes for the best adult costume. It's free to play bingo, however, this event is for ages 21 and up only. Bingo starts promptly at 7 p.m. This article is entitled Midland Drive-By Shooting. Family Organizes GoFundMe for Victim's Daughter by B. K. Richter, staff writer. Family members of 22-year-old Savannah Calloway, a woman found dead while in the driver's seat of a parked vehicle during an October 19th shooting in Midland, have organized a GoFundMe for Calloway's memorial service and three-year-old daughter. According to Preston Del Rio, a family member of Calloway, he organized the fundraiser to support Calloway's daughter and the child's father. "We wanted to raise funds to put together a memorial for Savannah, of course, but most importantly, it's to help Savannah's daughter and her daughter's father, who is now a single parent," Del Rio said during an interview with the Reporter Telegram. "Only a small portion of it is going to be used for a memorial. We are going to try to save as much money to help Savannah's daughter." Del Rio said Calloway was an avid music lover and did everything with her daughter. "She was just a good person, a good, kind-hearted person," he reflected. "She was into drama and theater in school. She was also a cheerleader. She was a passionate person with everything she loved, and she loved with her own heart." Calloway attended Legacy High School and then graduated from Coleman High School. She also loved to ride on her longboard, according to Del Rio. Del Rio said Calloway was a support system for a lot of people. "She was there for a lot of people," he recalled. "She touched a lot of lives, and lots of people knew her. She was a sweet person, just a sweet, good, good-hearted person." Two arrests have been made by the Midland Police Department in the drive-by shooting that killed Calloway. The two suspects, identified as 18-year-old Ivan Galindo and 17-year-old Joe Daniel Gutierrez, were detained by Midland police officers and then subsequently arrested and charged with murder, a first-degree felony. Additionally, both Galindo and Gutierrez are each being held on $1 million bond, according to the Midland County Detention Center detainee records. "We are glad that justice is being served, but it still does not, you know, take away the pain that the family feels," said Del Rio. "The investigation is still ongoing." "It's so hard to process this loss," Del Rio said. "It doesn't feel real." This article is entitled "Legacy High's Trey Rolston Qualifies as National Merit Semifinalist" by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Trey Rolston, a senior at Midland Legacy High School, was recently named a National Merit Semifinalist. Rolston is one of four students in Midland County who have earned this achievement, and are also the first students to reach this status in Midland County since 2019. Seven Midland ISD students were also recently named commended students by the National Merit Scholarship Program. Rolston is the son of Erica and Jay Rolston. At Legacy High, he serves as president of the National Honor Society and as vice president of the French National Honor Society. He is a member of the LHS Choir and the Interact Club. He is a student journalist and is the associate editor and co-founder of the Rebel Report student newspaper. He is the head MC for the LHS Student Council and is the secretary and co-founder of the Mu Alpha Theta Honor Society. Rolston is also a member of the LHS Theater Troupe 5968, is on Mitch Etzel's Principal Advisory Council, is on the UIL Journalism, Mathematics, and Social Studies teams, is a member of Quill and Scroll Honor Society, and is in the Texas Future Music Educators of Legacy High School. He has been a three-time area qualifier in the TMEA All-State Choir Competition, and has received a Division I for his solo and ensemble at the Texas State Solo and Ensemble Contest. He was elected as a chairman of the Model OAS General Assembly and has served at Precinct, District, and Region Champion, and was a State Party Committee member at Texas Boys State. Rolston has served on Representative August Pfluger's Congressional Youth Advisory Council. Rolston has also been recognized as an AP Scholar with Distinction. He qualified as a National Merit semifinalist when he scored a 15-20 on the PSAT his junior year. Rolston said he found out about his PSAT scores during his first period class after his friends told him that the score had been released. I first saw my score in my first period AP physics class, Rolston said. I pulled up the College Board website, and there was a 1520, and I was in disbelief. I thought that my Chromebook was showing me what was possible to get on the PSAT. He added, once I realized that it was showing my actual score, my heart dropped. For the rest of the day, I couldn't stop smiling. My parents were ecstatic, and we all sat down together to research what my score meant. Rolston said that during their research, he realized that he was likely to earn the semifinalist distinction. My status as a semifinalist was confirmed when LHS administrators came into my choir class waving pom-poms and holding a giant poster with my face on it, Rolston said. They set off confetti and congratulated me on being a semifinalist. Rolston said that the rest of that day he walked around campus with the rolled-up poster under his arm and a smile on his face. I felt like a huge weight had been lifted off my chest, Rolston said. As a semifinalist, and hopefully a finalist, I realized that I would be able to get scholarships that would help me pay for college. He added that his family was stressing about how to fund both his and his sister's education. I was proud that I received my National Merit semifinalist status because I would be able to help my family and take some of the burden off my parents' shoulders, Rolston said. Legacy High School hosted an intensive class for juniors who had previously scored high on the PSAT their sophomore year in preparation of taking the test again. Rolston was one of the students invited to the intensive program, which lasted half a day. My peers and I studied with a teacher and reviewed common grammar and math rules, learned strategies to use on the PSAT, Rolston said. This school intensive is the reason I was able to succeed on the PSAT. To achieve finalist status, each semifinalist is required to apply, listing their extracurricular activities, an ACT or SAT score that confirms their PSAT score, a first-choice college, and a personal statement. Students must also maintain a high grade point average and must be endorsed by a school official in their application. Rolston completed his application earlier this month and said that although he already has scores that confirm his PSAT score, he will be taking another SAT and ACT exam to see if he can improve and make his finalist application stronger. Rolston said he's been enjoying his senior year so far. He was cast as Seymour in LHS's production of Little Shop of Horrors and advanced to the pre-area in the TMEA All-State Choir Competition. Seymour was a dream role of mine, Rolston said. I'm also hoping to make it to the state choir this year. Rolston said that he has a great group of friends that have supported him and encourage him to keep doing his best. This year, he looks forward to the UIL one-act play competition and is striving to make his last competitive play the best one yet. After high school, he plans to attend either the University of Oklahoma, the University of Alabama, or Southern Methodist University to pursue a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Vocal Performance. He also wants to pursue a Juris Doctorate and practice law. This article is entitled, Midland Woman Arrested for Child Injury Faces Federal Probation Violation, by B.K. Richter. A woman has been charged with injury to a child and has been found to have had a warrant for her arrest. The Midland County Sheriff's Office said the arrest of Jacqueline Pruneda Hinojos, 33, occurred after deputies responded to the 3700 block of West County Road 138 about child custody issues on October 22nd. While on scene, the juvenile told responding deputies that they felt unsafe to go home. According to the sheriff's office, other family members told deputies of possible physical abuse against the juvenile committed by Hinojos, the juvenile's mother. Midland County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigative Division investigators found probable cause to arrest Hinojos for injury to a child, MCSO said. Hinojos was also found to have a warrant for violation of federal probation. Hinojos has been detained at the Midland County Central Detention Center. The investigation is ongoing, and further information wasn't available Monday afternoon. This article is entitled, Some Mail-In Ballots Pulled for Missing Information, by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. The total number of ballots by mail received by the Midland County Elections Office has decreased because some have been found to be missing information. On Thursday, the Elections Office had recorded 659 ballots by mail. However, 7 have been pulled since then, at least temporarily, because of missing information. After the ballots are checked in, we have to remove the back of the flap of the carrier envelope, Elections Officer Rosa Olguin told the Reporter-Telegram. This section contains the voters' ID numbers. If the ID numbers are missing, those ballots get pulled, and we send corrective action forms to those voters to correct missing or incorrect information. Signatures also have to be made in the appropriate areas, Olguin said, adding that having a ballot pulled does not mean it won't count, but voters must act when they receive a corrective action form. They have up to 6 days after Election Day to correct most defects. Vote tally through Sunday. Polls continue to be busy in Midland County, with more than a quarter of registered voters already having cast their vote. Through Sunday, the number of in-person voters totaled 25,438, according to Midland County Elections Office data. Add in 652 ballots by mail, and the tally of early votes is 26,090. There are 99,004 registered voters in Midland County, and 26% have voted so far. The busiest location has been Centennial Library, with 7,028 people casting votes there in the first 7 days. The library saw 1,325 voters on Saturday, the highest number of votes cast at a location on a single day. The Elections Office has seen 6,159 voters so far, followed by Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 5,669, Manor Park, 3,425, and Cogdell Learning Center, 3,157. Early voting locations. Early voting in Texas runs through November 1st. Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th. Here's where you can cast your ballot early. Elections Office, inside the County Annex Building at 2110 North A Street, October 28th to November 1st, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Centennial Library, Meeting Room 113, at 2503 West Loop 250, October 28th to November 1st, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Cogdell Learning Center, Classroom 4, 201 West Florida Avenue, October 28th to 30th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., and October 31st to November 1st, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, Classroom 2, 3818 North Midland Drive, October 28th to 30th, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., October 31st to November 1st, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Village at Manor Park. Sparks Great Room at the Margaret Cowden Clubhouse, 431 Manor Village Circle. October 28th to 30th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., and October 31st to November 1st, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. This article is entitled Trinity School of Midland's Homecoming Coronation, by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Trinity School of Midland celebrated their homecoming on Friday. The Chargers defeated Coram Deo Academy 68-50 at Trinity School's Coombs Field. The crown bearers for the homecoming coronation were Gigi Hawkins and Max Christensen. The 2024 homecoming King Court included Lincoln Lewis, John Doerr, Devin Jeffcoat, and Anthony Mixer. The 2024 homecoming Queen Court featured Brooklyn Pearson, Lomi Lewis, Lily McHale, and Modesta Wellborn. Trinity School crowned Lincoln Lewis and Brooklyn Pearson as the 2024 homecoming King and Queen under Friday night's lights. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Wall Street Anticipates Big Week. Crude oil drops 6%, by Stan Cho, Associated Press. New York. U.S. stocks closed broadly higher Monday as gains by some big tech companies helped offset a skid in oil and gas stocks after the price of crude had its biggest drop in more than a year. The S&P 500 rose 0.3%. The main measure of the U.S. stock market was coming off its first losing week in the last seven, but it's still near its all-time high set earlier this month. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.6%, while the NASDAQ Composite finished 0.3% higher. It's now within 0.4% of its all-time high set in July. Several big tech stocks, including Apple and Meta Platforms, helped lead the way. Five of the behemoths, known as the Magnificent Seven, are on this week's schedule to report their latest profits. These high-flying stocks have been at the forefront of Wall Street for years and have grown so big that their movements can single-handedly shift the S&P 500. After suffering a summertime swoon on worries that their stock prices had risen too quickly when compared with their profits, Alphabet, Meta Platforms, Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon are under pressure to deliver more growth. Another member of the Magnificent Seven, Tesla, soared to one of the best days in its history last week after reporting a better profit than analysts expected. Monday's gains for big tech helped offset drops for stocks in the oil and gas industry, which were hurt by the sinking price of oil. ExxonMobil fell 0.5% and ConocoPhillips fell 1.2%. A barrel of benchmark U.S. crude fell 6.1%, and Brent crude, the international standard, slid 6.1%. It was the first day of trading for them since Israel attacked Iranian military targets on Saturday in retaliation for an earlier barrage of ballistic missiles. Israel's attack was more restrained than some investors had feared it could be, and it raised hopes that a worst-case scenario may be avoided. Beyond the violence that is taking a human toll, the worry in financial markets is that an escalating war in the Middle East could cut off the flow of crude from Iran, which is a major oil producer. Such worries had sent the price of Brent crude up to nearly $81 per barrel in early October, despite signals that plenty of oil is available for the global economy. It's since fallen back below $72. Financial markets are also dealing with the volatility that typically surrounds a U.S. presidential election, with Election Day fast approaching in two Tuesdays. Markets have historically been shaky heading into an election, only to calm afterward regardless of which party wins. The trend affects both the stock and the bond markets. In the bond market, Treasury yields were ticking higher to tack more gains onto their sharp rise for the month so far. The yield on the 10-year Treasury rose to 4.28% from 4.24% late Friday. That's well above the roughly 3.70% level where it was near the start of October. Yields have climbed as report after report has shown the U.S. economy remains stronger than expected. That's good news for Wall Street because it bolsters hopes the economy can escape from the worst inflation in generations without the painful recession that many had worried was inevitable. But it's also forcing traders to ratchet back forecasts for how deeply the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates, now that it's just as focused on keeping the economy humming as getting inflation lower. With bets diminishing on how much the Fed will ultimately cut rates, Treasury yields have also been given back some of their earlier declines. This is the Life Tributes column. William Bryan Sledge, April 30, 1975 to October 22, 2024. William Bryan Sledge, better known as Brian, or Coach Sledge, age 49 of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, October 22nd. A visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, October 30th at Nellie Pickelinwell's funeral home. Services will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 31st at Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Highway 191 in Midland. Interment will follow at 3 p.m. at Trinity Memorial Park in Big Spring. Brian was born on April 30, 1975 in Big Spring to Tammy Davidson and William Bill W. Sledge III. Brian is survived by his wife, Emily McKay Sledge, his daughter, Suri Elise Sledge. He is also survived by his father, William Bill W. Sledge III, and stepmother, Vicki Sledge. Brian is preceded in death by his mother, Tammy Davidson. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Fix West Texas, from where Brian adopted several cats and dogs. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickelinwell's funeral home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ryan Lattner, August 23, 1990 to October 21, 2024. Ryan Dean Lattner, 34, left this earth in the early morning hours of October 21st. Ryan was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when he was 7 years old. His poor little body just kept taking a beating, including a hip replacement, the loss of both feet, neuropathy, infections, and ultimately kidney failure requiring dialysis. Ryan was born on October 23, 1990 in Midland. Ryan was survived by his aunt mom, Dawn, and uncle Corey Sly of Midland, as well as his mother, April Lattner of Lubbock, his father, Roy Lattner of Breckenridge, and his sister, Justina Lattner of Yuma, Arizona, as well as multiple nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his grandmothers, Mama Claudette Horstman and Elaine Sly, both of Midland, and his great-grandmother, Maud Garrett of Stanton. Due to Ryan's disabilities and health needs during these past couple of years, it became necessary for him to live at Focused Care at Midland. Because of this, we would like to request that in lieu of flowers, please donate a package or two of men's and or women's socks to the residents of Focused Care at Midland, 2000 North Main Street. Because Ryan always had enjoyed the parties and celebrations they had during his time at Focused Care, a casual come-as-you-are celebration of life for Ryan will be held at Focused Care in Midland at 2 p.m. on Saturday, November 2nd. Monty K. Cross, December 3rd, 1947 to October 25th, 2024. Monty K. Cross, 76, of Midland, passed away peacefully on October 25th. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, October 29th at Nellie Pickelinwell's funeral home. Her service will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 30th at Stonegate Fellowship. A graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. November 1st at Newman Cemetery in Sylvester, Texas. Monte Kay was born on December 3, 1947 in Amarillo to Alan and Dixie Johnson. She is preceded in death by her husband, Larry Jess Cross. She is survived by her two brothers, Richard Connie Johnson and Jean Joyce Johnson. Her two boys, Clayton Cross and partner Kevin Joyce, Clint Crystal Cross, and three grandchildren, Keith, Colin, and Kendall Cross, as well as a bonus daughter, Carrie, David Underhill, also including many cousins, nieces, and nephews, and aunts and uncles. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Well Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mervyn Hale. Mervyn Hale, 90, of Midland, passed away October 27th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, November 1st, at Crestview Baptist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, October 29th. ECISD kicks off Red Ribbon Week. Ector County ISD hosted a kickoff for Red Ribbon Week Monday in the parking lot of the administration building. This year's theme is Life is a Movie, Film Drug-Free. School District, City of Odessa, and nonprofit officials were part of the event, along with Permian High School's Color Guard, Drumline, and Panther Paws. Red Ribbon Week is October 23rd through 31st. We're coming together as a community to reaffirm our shared commitment to health, safety, and making positive choices, Interim Superintendent Keely Boyer said. This week is more than just a week on the calendar. It's a week to reflect on the importance of living drug-free, not just for ourselves, but for the well-being of our families, schools, and the broader community. Your presence today is a testament to the collective commitment we have to the future of our students and the strength of our community. Together, we can make a difference. In response to the murder of DEA agent Enrique Kiki Camarena, in 1985, communities across the country began wearing red ribbons as a symbol of their commitment to raise awareness of the killing and destruction caused by drugs in America. ECISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels said the origins of Red Ribbon Week trace back to the life and work of Camarena. From an early age, Camarena aspired to make a meaningful difference in his community. After earning a college degree in criminal justice, he served honorably as a U.S. Marine, a police officer, before joining the DEA to fight against illegal drugs. In 1985, while working undercover in Mexico, Camarena was tragically kidnapped and murdered by drug traffickers at just 37 years old, Daniels said. He left behind his wife Geneva and their three children. His untimely death sparked outrage and sorrow among citizens, particularly in his hometown of Calimexico, California. In response to the devastating impact of his murder and the broader effects of drugs in our society, community members began wearing red ribbons as a symbol of their commitment to raise awareness about the dangers posed by drugs. This movement quickly gained traction across the country, leading to Congress officially declaring the last week of October as Red Ribbon Week in 1988. Since then, it has become a time for American children, parents, and educators to come together to promote a drug-free America and honor the legacy of Enrique Camarena. The mission of the Red Ribbon Campaign is to foster a united, visible commitment toward creating a drug-free America. Through initiatives like this, we can work together to keep our children, families, and communities safe and healthy together, Daniels added. Melissa Brayman, Prevention Program Director at the Permian Basin Regional Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, said the organization applauds the district for hosting the kickoff. She said they will see more than 27,000 young people this week in the Permian Basin. Those are one-on-one presentations with small groups of students to large classroom settings, to activities, to fun through games. Red Ribbon Week really poses the opportunity to empower adults in our community. We have to teach and guide our young people on how to live healthy lives. Every single person at the council is dedicated to the health and well-being of young people, Brayman said. Fentanyl is the drug they are currently focusing on. They also provide education on naloxone, also known as Narcan, a medication used to reverse opioid overdoses. Fourth or fifth grade isn't too young to talk to your children about drugs, she said. In this area, children are using alcohol, tobacco, and vaping at 12 and a half. It's about 13 and a half for marijuana. It's no longer about if you use drugs or alcohol. This is about what's going to happen to your body. The conversation is, if you take a pill that you don't know where it came from, you're probably going to die. That's the conversation we're having with kids these days. And it's very tragic. Young people do get caught up in drug use. We have to take it for what it is, and we have to empower every single one of you there here today, every day. It's not just a hit or miss, it's a conversation that we have to get all year long with everyone and anyone who wants to know about specific drugs and what's happening in the community, Brayman said. In an interview after her remarks, Brayman said, Red Ribbon Week does make an impact. What prevention really is planting a seed. So if a child hears a prevention presentation once, it can make a big difference in their lives, she said. But a lot of the time when kids come up and they want to tell us stories or they want to say something, it's really happening. The other part of these presentations is just ensuring that they're heard and seen and valued, that there's no such thing as a stupid question. It really boils down to what they learn in school about Red Ribbon Week. They're going to take it to their house, so we're at least getting an ounce of prevention into their mind. We are hoping parents really have the conversation about what it is and what not to do, Brayman said. Bass Pro Shops to have groundbreaking. A groundbreaking for Bass Pro Shops will be held at 10:30 a.m. October 30th at State Highway 191 and Mission Boulevard. The 100,000 square foot store is expected to open October 1st, 2025. Bass Pro Shops offers the best in fishing, hunting, and camping equipment and apparel for the outdoors, among many other items, said Tom Glassman, Senior Vice President of ICA Development, LLC. This will be one piece of a 150-acre mixed-use development, Glassman said. Satin Strings has rich history. Started in 1988 by Charles Nail, Permian High School's Satin Strings Ensemble is one of the premier groups in the basin. It has traveled around the world and made its mark. Nail got the idea from watching an Air Force strolling strings ensemble at a conference. He decided he could have his students do the same, Permian High School Orchestra Director Todd Barridge said. Barridge was a junior at PHS when Satin Strings started, and now he directs it. There were about 15 people in it at the time. We started going around and memorizing music. There was even a book that we followed along that had pre-described music, pre-described motions. It's not a unique idea, but for West Texas at that time, it was one of the first truly independent ensembles outside of your traditional orchestra or your traditional marching band, Barridge said. After Nail retired, Kathy Fishburne took over and made it super popular. when she was director. They got invited to go to the 50th anniversary of D-Day and played in Normandy, France. They were also invited to do two inaugurations in Chihuahua, Mexico. They've been all over the place. When David Golden was the director, he took them along with the bands from Odessa High School and Permian High School to Pasadena, California, and Satin Strings, while they were there, played for renowned composer John Williams, Berridge said. Since Berridge got to PHS, they have traveled internationally several times. When they were asked, they do a tour and play in several different places, but Berridge likes to say that their favorite gigs are at home. That's true, because we like to play for our local people, but ever since COVID, most of the live performances out in the public have kind of dried up, he said. They are starting to get back some of them, but some of the larger corporations no longer have Christmas parties, he said. There are 30 students in Satin Strings this year. Baird said they average anywhere between 25 and 35 musicians. One year they had 40, but when he was in it, there were 12 or 15. We try to keep it that way so that every part is covered twice or three times. So if we have a performance, there's always going to be somebody on the part and not playing solo, Baird said. Satin Strings plays everything from classical to rock to country to bluegrass to Celtic music. It's all there. We do everything. Matter of fact, this first concert we're having, we're doing classical, country, bluegrass, 80s, synth pop, and some Scottish music, Berridge said. The group will perform at the 22nd annual Spooktacular Concert at 7 p.m., October 28th at the MCM Grande Fun Dome. The event will feature the orchestras of Permian, Bonham, Nimitz, and Wilson and Young. There will be music, food, prizes for the best costume and fun. Reserved tickets are $20 and are on sale until noon on October 28th at tinyurl.com/c36kyaw. They also get called to perform at HEB's Feast of Sharing and different retirement homes. And of course, that's what we're supposed to do. We go out there. They're very gracious. They pay us for our time, or they buy the kids food. And that's part of the charter of Satin Strings, is that we go out in the public and we spread the gospel of mojo, so to speak, Berridge said. Students auditions for the group every April, even if they are already in it. It's rare that a freshman makes it, but it has happened. It is a difficult audition to make. Some kids, you know they're going to make it, and they slide right in. That's why we tend to have a freshman orchestra, so you can kind of feel out what's going to be in there. But then some kids will come in, they'll just surprise you, and they'll have worked on it, and worked on it, and worked on it. And through working on that audition, they become better musicians themselves. It translates into the orchestra. They make it translate into Satin Strings. It translates into their confidence, their willingness to go out into the public and play a solo. It's amazing what this does to kids, Berridge said. All of the students in Satin Strings are the ones that usually pass their classes. If they pass their classes, they can play. They used to have more crossover from band and orchestra than they have now, because students have to choose pathways and have to select from orchestra, band, choir, or theater. They have the most crossover right now with a dance teacher, dance team, Panther Paws, and orchestra. The hierarchy is the symphony orchestra. They're the parent organization, and then Satin Strings is just an auxiliary part of it. Over in choir, you have Contori, that's their top choir, and Black Magic is an auxiliary, Berridge said. An El Paso native, he moved to Odessa in second grade. He earned a bachelor's degree in music ed from Texas Tech University and got his first job in Vernon teaching choir and band. Berridge taught for 10 or 11 years in the Metroplex in Denton and Flower Mound. Then he got a call from the director of fine arts, Randy Talley, that brought him back to Odessa. That was 17, almost 18 years ago. Neil was a big influence on Berridge. He taught me patience, virtue, how to practice, he said. Nell was in charge of band and orchestra at the time. The way he handled kids and the way he brought music out of kids, that just made me want to do the same thing. I felt that was my calling, Berridge said. Berridge and his wife, Jessica, an assistant principal at Reagan Elementary School, have two children, seniors Aliana Rivera and Andrea Valenzuela have been in Satin Strings for 3 years. Rivera is 18 and Valenzuela is 17. Both are in the symphony, play violin, and saw Satin Strings in elementary school around Christmas time. Valenzuela thought it was cool that Satin Strings players didn't look at music. Her aunt works at a nursing home, and Valenzuela was there when the group would play for the residents. I just thought that was so sweet to give back to the community with music, and that's why I wanted to join, Valenzuela said. Rivera and Valenzuela said they have enjoyed bonding with everyone, and they enjoy practicing together as an ensemble. My favorite part of being in this group is definitely the community and being with people that think alike and they have the same passion in music as you. We also are close together being in the same group for multiple years. You build all these friendships with people and that spreads throughout your high school. It's not just orchestra, Valenzuela said. Odessa Retired Teachers Meeting Set. Odessa Retired Teachers will have their monthly meeting on November 18th at Highland United Methodist Church, located at 1808 North Dixie Boulevard. A light lunch will be served at 11:30 a.m. and a meeting to follow. Guest speaker will be State Representative Brooks Landgraf. Come for food, fun, fellowship, and information. OC Honors slated. Odessa College will host its annual OC Honors Luncheon to celebrate outstanding individuals and organizations who have contributed to improving education in the Permian Basin. At a separate event Tuesday evening, OC will announce the student winner of the $10,000 cash prize. Those recognized at this year's OC Honors will be Outstanding Individual, Jay Hendricks, Outstanding Educator, John Wilkins, Outstanding Nonprofit, Crisis Center of West Texas, Outstanding Business, JSA Architects, and the Community Impact Award winner, Lori Johnson. Individual tickets and tables are available for purchase online at odessa.edu/OC Honors, and tickets will also be on sale at the event. The celebration luncheon from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. October 29th will take place at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center with Emmy-winning and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa, featured as the keynote speaker. Later that evening at 6 p.m. at the OC Sports Center, Hinojosa will speak at a special event for students and the public, where the student winner of the $10,000 cash prize, celebrating OC's fall enrollment of more than 10,000 students, will be announced. The first runner-up will receive a $2,000 scholarship, and the second runner-up will receive a $1,000 scholarship, courtesy of the Odessa College Foundation. In 2010, Maria Hinojosa founded Futuro Media, an independent nonprofit newsroom based in Harlem, New York City, with the mission to create multimedia content from a POC perspective. She has informed millions about the changing culture and political landscape in America and abroad as the anchor and executive producer of the Peabody award-winning show Latino USA, co-host of Futuro Media's award-winning political podcast In the Thick, and most recently, her Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast, Suave. Hinojosa has won 4 Emmys, the John Chancellor Award, 2 Robert F. Kennedy Awards, the Overseas Press Club Edward R. Murrah Award, and the Murrah Lifetime Achievement Award. She is the author of 4 books, Cruise, Raising Raul, Once I Was You, a memoir of love and hate in torn America, and the young reader's version of her memoir, Once I Was You. Hinojosa is the distinguished journalist in residence at her alma mater, Barnard College. These days, her focus is deep accountability, investigative journalism.
This is the Dear Abby column. End-of-year celebration flies off the rails. Dear Abby, I chaired an event with a local service organization. Many hours were exhausted with planning and decorating. During the program, a few members playfully started throwing some items from the centerpieces at the guest speakers. By the end of the program, most of the room's centerpieces were dismantled and on the floor. My committee had the job of cleanup, which was difficult and tedious. We felt the many hours we spent planning and doing hard work were disrespected because of these juvenile antics. This was an end-of-the-year program, ringing in new officers and celebrating a wonderful previous year. And there are always some lighthearted shenanigans, but I've never experienced total chaos before. Should I say something, or chalk it up to celebrating a successful year's end? Signed, Flabbergasted in Texas. Dear Flabbergasted, were these lighthearted members drunk or just disorderly? Lightheartedly destroying the centerpieces and throwing parts of them at the speakers? How disrespectful to everyone involved, not to mention potentially dangerous. I don't think what happened should be ignored. By all means, speak up. You and the other committee members are certainly entitled to let the perpetrators know how it made you feel. You're not the only person who is flabbergasted. So am I. Dear Abby, how do I tell my friend Lila that I think she'd be happier if she got divorced? To be clear, I don't think her relationship is unsafe. It's just unhappy. Things have been rocky with her wife for a while now. They keep trying to work things out, but every few months something new comes up or becomes a problem again. Lila cares deeply about her wife. She really wants to make things work, but I constantly hear she feels neglected and unattractive because of how her wife treats her. I'm obviously only hearing half the story, but it seems like Lila is putting in all the effort to make the relationship work, and her wife isn't responding in kind. Part of the problem may be that Lila is introverted and doesn't have many friends besides her wife and me, which may be why she clings so hard to that relationship. I think both of them would be happier if they stopped trying to make the marriage work and went back to being friends. But I don't know how to tell Lila that, or even if I should. Please help. Signed, Listening in Maryland. Dear Listening, stay out of it. Lila needs a friend and a sounding board at this point, not a life coach. If her marriage is as dysfunctional as you have described, she will figure out sooner or later when it's time to dial it back or to end it. Understand that when divorces happen, most couples don't go back to being friends, unless there are children involved. Dear Abby, what can I buy for Christmas for my brother who is terminally ill with cancer? Nothing seems right. Not music, books, or any of the things he has always enjoyed. I'm at a loss. Any thoughts? Signed, Saddened in Oregon. Dear Saddened, I am so sorry about your brother's diagnosis. The surest way to give him something he will enjoy would be to ask him what he would like. His activities may be diminished, but he can point you in the right direction. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.